It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Sectarian violence revisits the Kenyan port city Mombasa. Today is World Tuberculosis Day, an important day for South Africans. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. In the port city of Mombasa, gunmen entered a church service Sunday, opened fire on worshippers, killing at least four, wounding others. Witnesses say blood-splattered Bibles and overturned chairs lay strewn across the church floor after the attack near the Kenyan port city. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the al-Qaeda-linked Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab and its Kenyan sympathizers have been blamed for similar attacks. Kenyan troops, which are part of an African Union force fighting Islamist militants in Somalia, are currently taking part in a new offensive against the suspected Al-Shabaab bases. Both Kenya and Uganda have warned of a threat of fresh Al-Shabaab attacks within their own borders. A North Korean-flagged oil tanker that a Libyan militia illegally loaded with crude oil has returned to Libya. Officials say the Morning Glory will sail Sunday to the port of Zawiya near the Libyan capital Tripoli, where it was to offload its cargo. Libyan Navy spokesman Colonel Ayub Qasim told a news conference Sunday the tanker's crew and three armed Libyans were handed over to judicial police. They await permission to deliver that oil shipment to the Zawiya port. U.S. forces seized the vessel last week off the Mediterranean island of Cyprus, stopping an attempt by rebels to sell the crude in defiance of the government in Tripoli. The return of the tanker, a rare victory for the government in Tripoli, which is struggling to end a port blockage by rebels, one of many challenges facing the central government since it's failed to secure the North African country 3 years after the fall of Muammar Gaddafi. Today is World Tuberculosis Day, a day set aside to raise awareness of the global struggle against that disease. It remains South Africa's top killer. Tuso Kumala reports from Johannesburg. Some 80% of young adults are believed to be infected with TB.
The World Health Organization says 482,000 of South Africa's 50 million people contract TB every year, and it is the leading cause of death. Peter Mabulane, Community Service Manager at the South African National Tuberculosis Association, says poverty is the culprit when it comes to accessing information and treatment for this curable disease.
If you check the poverty-stricken line in South Africa, that's where you find a lot of TB patients, because they don't have good nutrition, they can't afford this, they are squatters. For you to win the battle against TB, one of the main things is that you need to live a healthy living style. You need to eat proper food, and we don't have that.
Dr. Ahmed Mohammed has operated a private surgery practice for years at Bakkerstal, one of the areas hit by violent protests in South Africa because of poor living conditions. He says unless the government decentralizes TB treatment centers to poor communities and improves general living conditions, the fight against TB is a lost cause. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Refugee Agency reports tensions between local residents and Sudanese refugees in Mapen County in Upper Nile State in South Sudan are on the rise. The UNHCR says reprisal attacks have forced thousands to flee the Yusuf Puntel camp. Lisa Schlein reports.
UNHCR spokeswoman Fatoumata Lejeune Kaba says the refugees since have returned to the camp, but tensions persist and have spread to the Doro and Kaya refugee camps. She says the villagers and refugees are fighting over limited resources, including wood, grass, and grazing land. She says the hostility between the two groups reached such a fever pitch recently that both groups set fire to each other's houses, tents, and granaries. She tells VOA the villagers themselves are suffering as much as the refugees.
And this is all due to the current situation. Mabane is an isolated area with the fighting since December. It's been one of the hardest hit areas, and people can't just, whether it's humanitarian agencies or commercially, people can't just go in and out of the town.
Mabon County hosts 125,000 Sudanese refugees who fled from embattled Blue Nile State. The UNHCR says one-third of the refugee population is made up of small children, pregnant and lactating women, as well as the elderly, disabled, and people who are chronically ill. Lisa Schlein for VOA News.
I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's Electoral Commission will today release a preliminary voters list ahead of the May 20th general election.
What it means is that all people who registered will be required to go to the center where they registered and verify how their details are appearing in the register.
Sangwani Mwafulewa is the spokesman for Malawi's Electoral Commission. Liberia's press union says free speech is under attack after a talk show host is arrested and jailed. There is an Ebola outbreak in Guinea-Conakry. And the ICC and Ivory Coast government are again urged to investigate allegations of crimes against humanity by supporters of President Ouattara.
I think what we've seen thus far is a complete absence of concrete progress in cases against those who were supporters of President Ouattara who committed crimes.
Parampreet Singh is a lawyer with Human Rights Watch. A group of Zimbabwe youth travels two continents next month to correct what they call distorted information about their country. And today is World Tuberculosis Day, as 1 million children are infected each year. The stories plus Mark Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi's Electoral Commission says it plans to release a preliminary voters list today, Monday, to allow prospective voters to verify their information before the May 20th general election. Spokesman Sangwani Mwafulewa tells reporter Peter Clotty that the Electoral Commission seeks to produce a dependable voters list for the upcoming election.
As well as the commission, we are preparing for the elections on 20th May. So one of the activities that we'll be doing starting on the 24th, which is a Monday, is opening up the voters roll for inspection to the public. What it means is that all people who registered will be required to go to the center where they registered and verify how their details are appearing in the register. If there will be any anomalies, this is the period that we'd want you to correct it. And if there are some people who moved from the centers or who relocated from the centers where they registered, this is the time whereby they can process for transfers.
How long will this process last about name or information verification? And after they verify their names, what happens next?
This process, we have done it that it's going to take two phases. The first phase is running from 24th to 28th of March, and then the second phase is going to run from the 5th to the 5th of April. After this period, what we're going to do is whatever will be noted during this time, whether it will be mistakes which we need to correct, we are going to go back as Malawi Electoral Commission, update our voters' roll. Then we're going to go into the period whereby we're going to print the final voters' register, which will be used on the following day. I should also put it on record that this is the official campaign period. That is, the candidates are allowed to go into the field and the campaign or meet the electorate and sell themselves. So we will be monitoring this campaign, how the candidates are conducting their campaign.
Some Malawians expressed concern following the cooperation between the Malawi Electoral Commission and the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. Some are saying that the officials of Zimbabwe Electoral Commission in the country could influence negatively the Malawi Electoral Commission's administering of this year's general election. What do you say to that?
We, as Malawi Electoral Commission, we help borrowed from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission 10,500 gas lamps and also 300 tents, which we wanted to use on the following day. Why we decided to go to Zimbabwe and borrow these gas lamps is because our stakeholders were complaining that the lighting system that we have in some of the polling centers is so poor that they cannot see clearly at night. And some centers we are using generators, and there are recording instances whereby the generators will run out of fuel. So that's why we decided to go and borrow these pumps. This is an issue that the commission has briefed all stakeholders, and some of course might raise some questions. Say, apart from borrowing the lamps and the tents, is anything else that are you getting from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission? And the commission has come out clearly to say, apart from these gas lamps and the tents, you are not getting anything from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
Sangwani Mwafulewa is the spokesman for Malawi's Electoral Commission. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. A human rights lawyer has called on the International Criminal Court, the ICC, and the Ivory Coast government to engage in credible investigations into allegations that supporters of President Alassane Ouattara committed crimes against humanity during that country's 2011 post-election conflict. Prampreet Singh of Human Rights Watch says if there is enough evidence that crimes were committed, those responsible should be prosecuted. This comes after Ivory Coast government over the weekend transferred to the ICC for prosecution Charles Blaye Goudé, the youth leader and close ally of former President Laurent Gbagbo. Singh tells me that Blaye Goudé is charged with committing crimes against humanity.
He's been charged with four counts of crimes against humanity for his alleged role in the post-election violence beginning in November of 2010 and extending through till May of 2011. The International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant against him in December of 2011, so the arrest warrant's been outstanding for just over 2 years. And he was finally surrendered by the Ivorian authorities to The Hague on Saturday to answer for the charges against him.
The way I understand it, that Blaye Goudé had asked to be tried by an Ivorian court. So was that privilege not available in Cote d'Ivoire?
The ICC is a court of last resort. So basically where national authorities are unable or unwilling to try cases that are in the ICC's jurisdiction, then the ICC would take over and try them in The Hague. And what happened with Blaye Goudé is that essentially the Ivorian authorities earlier this year tried to get an extension. They wanted more time from the court to basically build its own case against Blaye Goudé in Cote d'Ivoire. And unfortunately, that option isn't available under the Rome Statute. And Blaye Goudé has been in their custody since last January. So they had a lot of time. And it's only when the ICC asked them for an indication of what they were going to do in the Blaye Goudé case that they said, look, if you give us some more time, we can build a case. Because there's no legal basis to provide that extension of time, the ICC rejected that request. And basically that left the Ivorian authorities with the option of either surrendering him or taking a chance with whatever information that they had to challenge the admissibility of the case before the ICC. They decided to surrender him.
You know, you are the human rights people. The way we understand it, we've been reading about this, is that there was violence committed by both sides in the Ivory Coast conflict. The claim is that not much has been done to bring people, supporters of now the president of Ivory Coast, Ouattara, to bring charges against them.
That's right. I think what we've seen thus far is a complete absence of concrete progress in cases against those who were supporters of President Ouattara who committed crimes. You know, Human Rights Watch found that pro-Ouattara supporters committed crimes, but more importantly, there was a National Commission of Inquiry. So we're talking about a commission of inquiry within Cote d'Ivoire that also found that crimes were committed by both sides and recommended that there be prosecutions for both sides. Unfortunately, to date, neither the International Criminal Court nor the Ivorian authorities have brought forward any prosecutions against any pro-Ouattara suspect.
Prampreet Singh is a lawyer with Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with me from New York. Doctors Without Borders has launched an emergency medical intervention in southern Guinea in response to an outbreak of viral hemorrhagic fever. Guinea's Ministry of Health said the highly contagious virus, which is believed to be caused by the Ebola virus, has killed at least 34 people. Jennifer Lasuta has more from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
Guinea's Ministry of Health declared Friday that an outbreak of a rare and deadly form of the Ebola virus has reached epidemic proportions. The ministry said there have been 49 reported cases of the virus since early February. At least 34 people have died. In response to the outbreak, the international medical organization Doctors Without Borders, MSF, says it has partnered with the Ministry of Health to control the spread of the virus. MSF says it currently has a 24-member medical team on the ground to treat suspected cases. More staffers are scheduled to arrive in Guinea in coming days. Dr. Esther Sterk is a tropical disease specialist for MSF.
We have set up an isolation ward in Gekedu. It's one of the places where cases have been seen. So in this isolation unit, we are treating the patients. And also what we do, everybody that has been in contact with suspected patients or confirmed patients, We follow them up in the period of the incubation time, in the period that these people also can fall sick.
Sterk said an additional isolation ward will be set up in Macenta, where there have also been suspected cases of the virus. MSF said that more than 30 tons of medical supplies are now en route from Belgium and France to Guinea, including medications to ease the symptoms of the fever and equipment for isolation chambers. This is the first time that such a virus has been identified in Guinea. Guinea's Ministry of Health said that French scientists confirmed Saturday that at least some of the cases of the outbreak were caused by the Ebola virus. This particular strain of the virus is initially contracted from contact with contaminated rodent feces. It is then spread among humans through bodily fluids, such as sweat, saliva, and blood. Symptoms include high fever, vomiting, diarrhea, and in some cases, bleeding. The WHO says Ebola is one of the most highly contagious viral diseases. It results in death in between 25 and 90% of cases. The virus cannot be prevented with a vaccine and is untreatable with medication.
There's no curative treatment, but there is symptomatic treatment. So people have fever, we give something to reduce the fever. People can have diarrhea and vomiting, so we give fluids, IV fluids. People have often a lot of pain, so we give painkillers. So for the containment of the outbreak, it's very important that sick patients will be isolated and receive treatment in isolation ward.
The Ministry of Health says it has begun to educate the population about the symptoms of the virus and the importance of rapid treatment. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
It's Monday morning, March 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. The Press Union of Liberia has called on the government to unconditionally drop charges and release radio talk show host Henry Costa from further detention. Costa was arrested Friday and charged with making terroristic threats against National Security Agency Director Fumba Soliev, the son of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, by challenging him to a duel on Broad Street, one of the main thoroughfares in the capital, Monrovia. Press Union President Abdullahi Kamara says the arrest undermines Liberia's commitment to decriminalize free speech. He tells me the arrest also translates into a misuse of power.
The thing is, the Press Union is disappointed about the arrest of Henry Costa because it undermines the commitment the government has made about decriminalizing offenses. And the arrest comes less than a week after we had additional conversations with the government of Liberia at several levels on how we can work out the best framework for repealing laws that criminalize in our country.
You claim that this translates into a misuse of power. What do you mean by that?
CLA is translating to misuse of power. Now, they are saying, yeah, terrorist threat, that's the charge. But how feasible is it for Mr. Costa to threaten or to effect this kind of threat against Mr. Sirleaf? Firstly, Mr. Sirleaf is the son of the president. In the second place, he is the head of the National Security Agency with lack of power and security details.
Do you know what the government has charged him with?
Terroristic threat. It's one of those laws on our books which effectively hold people simply because they say something. Has Costa made any posture to show that you effect any harm? Does he really have any capacity to harm Mr. Sirleaf? And, you know, to all of these, I say no. And wanting to impose this kind of law like this, especially at the point that we're talking about, do not criminalize people for speaking against people, for criticizing people. And the issue of free expression, it actually includes people from government will have to recognize that sometimes the expression that they will have to accept will not really be fair, could even be derogatory. We will be reckless to some extent. But what extent, you know, to what extent? How does this statement really threaten anything?
You said that the government should decriminalize speech offenses.
By signing the Table Mountain Declaration, President did that 2 years ago. Just by signing that Table Mountain Declaration, it means that the government is committing itself to take actions that would decriminalize speech offenses.
Abdullahi Kamara is president of the Press Union of Liberia. He was speaking with me from Zozo in Lofa County. Some local youth affiliated with Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party are next month expected to begin a mission targeting a number of countries in Africa, Europe, and then the United States to narrate what they say is Zimbabwe's true story. They say information about Zimbabwe is deliberately distorted on the international arena. The initiative will also call for the removal of what the group called illegal sanctions against President Robert Mugabe and some of his close allies. Jonga Kandimiri spoke with Kanyonganesi, the group's spokesperson.
The message that we're trying to bring is that we'd like to tell the story of our Zimbabwe, the Zimbabwe that we know, and not looking at the Zimbabwe which has been portrayed by media, a lot of international media, a lot of foreign media, and people who have maybe not even set foot in Zimbabwe, who don't know about Zimbabwe, who don't know about the people of Zimbabwe, and who don't know about the opportunities in Zimbabwe. So our role really, it's an organization really just to tell the true story of Zimbabwe, to realign the truth and what's been out there all along for the last couple of years. As you know, the media is very interested in Zimbabwe, but the story that's been told has been very negative. So that is what ZGI is about.
How are you planning to initiate this?
The plan is to obviously take the story out to where it's been told the most. Like, for example, in South Africa, there isn't a day where you don't come across a story on Zimbabwe. So in that case, we're going to take the story to South Africa. So we're going on a tour. The tour is starting with people from ZGI traveling into South Africa in April. That's actually next month. And holding media briefings, speaking to people in industry, talking about the opportunities, people who want investment. So it's from a media point of view, it's from an economic point of view, it's from a political point of view, and just giving them answers to questions which they may have. Also telling the truth where maybe something has been distorted and bringing those kind of things out into the light.
Is this a government initiative or it's a party initiative?
A party initiative. It's got people from across political divides. It's not something that's going to be run as a government thing. You know, we want it to be non-partisan. We don't want anyone to think this is a ZANU-PF thing or it's a government. It's an initiative. It's a Zimbabwean initiative. So it's a national initiative.
Kanyonganesi is the spokesperson for a group of young people from Zimbabwe. She spoke with Jonga Kandimiri of VOA's Zimbabwe program. Today, Monday, is World Tuberculosis Day, and there's some sobering news about children and tuberculosis. A new study estimates that every year, 1 million children worldwide become infected with TB. That's twice previous World Health Organization estimates, and three times the number of youngsters who are reported, diagnosed, and treated for the disease annually. More concerning still is news that 32,000 children are sick with multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis, which is extremely difficult to treat. VOA's Jessica Berman has details.
Experts say there's a narrow window for identifying and treating children with the disease. Unlike adults who carry the bacterium in a latent form for many years before becoming ill, public health officials say kids infected with TB can become sick very rapidly and may die before ever seeing a doctor. Part of the problem is tuberculosis is very difficult to diagnose in children, according to Mercedes Becerra, a professor of global health and social medicine at Harvard Medical School in Boston. Becerra says the conventional sputum test used to successfully diagnose TB in adults doesn't work very well in children. The test looks for the presence of bacteria in a sample of mucus coughed up by patients. But Becerra, a senior author of the report on kids and TB published in the journal The Lancet, says the sputum test is not sensitive enough to pick up the disease in all youngsters.
Children have less bacteria, and their disease is actually different than adults. Tuberculosis presents differently.
In children, Becerra says the TB bacteria often do not stay confined to the lungs. Often the disease spreads to other parts of the body, including the brain and bone marrow. Becerra and colleagues at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston first looked into the number of cases of multi-drug-resistant TB in children. In the course of combing through regional and global estimates, they found around 1 million children overall developed TB in 2010, approximately double official estimates. Of these, researchers discovered more than 30,000 pediatric cases were drug resistant. Because children usually become infected with tuberculosis through exposure to sick adults, Becerra says many cases of TB could be prevented by thoroughly screening those who come in contact with patients, including children. Otherwise, Becerra says failure to examine children is a missed opportunity to treat and prevent tuberculosis.
every single child with TB is a warning signal that TB transmission is ongoing around that child and that children are not getting preventive therapy.
Becerra says most cases of tuberculosis occur in China, Russia, and India, but she says children are becoming infected with tuberculosis anywhere adults are sick with the disease. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sporting here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Ugandan John Cheptegei won the men's race at the World University Cross-Country Championships in Entebbe, Uganda on Saturday. Kenyans Daniel Muindi and Calvin Chemoi were followed. Meanwhile, Winnie Nanyondo, Dorcas Ajok and Prim Twikiriza made it a 1-2-3 Ugandan medal podium sweep in the women's race. Kenya won the men's team event. Uganda was second, followed by defending champions Japan, South Africa, Italy, Canada, France, China, Sri Lanka, and Oman. Meanwhile, Uganda carried the day in the women's team event. Defending champions Japan were runners-up, followed by Canada, South Africa, Italy, France, Australia, Kenya, and China. Meanwhile, Egyptian All-Africa Games champion Mustafa El Gamel set an Africa hammer throw record of 81.29 meters in Cairo, Egypt on Friday. The old mark of 80.63 meters was set by South African Chris Haramsa in 2005. Elsewhere, Kenyan world champion Eunice Sum and Mercy Cherono triumphed in the 800 meters and 1500 meters respectively at the IAAF World Challenge Series in Melbourne, Australia on Saturday. Other Kenyan victors were Isaiah Kiplangat Koech and James Kiplagat Magut in the men's 5,000 meters and 1,500 meters respectively. In handball, defending champions Egypt edged Algeria 26-23 to retain their Africa Men's Youth Handball Championship trophy in Nairobi, Kenya on Saturday. Tunisia dismissed Angola 24-16 in the bronze medal playoff. Egypt qualify for the World Youth Olympic due in Nanjing, China in August. In rugby, South Africa clinched the silver medal at the IRB 7 Series in Tokyo, Japan on Saturday. Fiji beat South Africa 33-26 in the main cup final. Overall, South Africa reclaimed the lead at the end of the sixth leg of the series with 116 points. Kenya is seventh with 57 points, while Zimbabwe is 18th with 1 point. Finally, in football, Zambia salvaged some national pride with a 2-1 triumph over hosts Costa Rica at the FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup in Tibas on Saturday. Zambian defender Martha Tembo was crowned player of the match. However, the win was not enough to see Zambia through to the second round. Meanwhile, although Ghana lost 2-1 to Canada at the same venue, they still topped Group B and advanced to the quarterfinals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owen, Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, March 24th.
I wish to thank Pope Francis for the audience granted to our president, Bill Jonathan, in Vatican City. And I pray this morning that all the discussions the Pope had with our president will be implemented in Nigeria. Comrade Mazi Patrick Okoro Krafo, Old Blue Premises, and Chukwu Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. That's it for this Monday, March 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.